Hi again, everybody. I'm Dan Horde, and this is the Bengals Booth Podcast, the Now or Never edition, as the Bengals try to end a five-game head-to-head losing streak against the dreaded, hated, but always respected Pittsburgh Steelers when the two teams meet on Monday Night Football at Paul Brown Stadium. Coming up, my broadcast partner Dave Lapham joins me to look at the matchup. We'll head to Pittsburgh and chat with a reporter who sees the Steelers every week. And we'll have a legendary coaches edition of The Last Lap as Dave Lapham returns to share some great stories about five of the best coaches in football history that he's gotten to know as a player or broadcaster. But before we get to all of that, here's a reminder that you can have the latest edition of this podcast delivered right to your phone, tablet, or computer by subscribing on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. It's the greatest invention since sunscreen. Take it from a bald dude who just spent 3 days in the Cayman Islands. The direct hit sunburn to the top of a chrome dome is brutal. I'll take any sunscreen I can find, mix it up in a big bowl, and slather it on the top of my head to avoid the dreaded burnt noggin. Enough on that subject. With back-to-back wins over Denver and Cleveland, two teams with a combined record of 3-19, the Bengals have kept their flickering playoff hopes alive. At 5-6, they're one game out of the final wildcard spot in the AFC, currently held by the Baltimore Ravens at 6-5. Buffalo is also 6-5, and the Bengals are one of three teams at 5-6. Chances are the final playoff spot in the AFC will go to one of those five teams. Needless to say, a win at home over the 9-2 Pittsburgh Steelers would provide a huge boost to the Bengals' playoff chances. So, Dre Kirkpatrick was asked this question on Thursday. Do you want to win it more on Monday night because of the importance of the game or because you're facing Pittsburgh, a team the Bengals have lost to 8 times in their last 9 meetings?
Nah, I think it's a little both. You know, if guys saying that it's not because we're playing the Steelers, I feel like they're lying. This is a big game, especially the position that we don't put ourselves in. It's a big game, man, and it's definitely a big game for me. I remember, you know, what happened. So at the end of the day, you know, we got to go out there and get this W.
I appreciate the fact that Dre didn't try to suggest that Pittsburgh is just another team. We all know that's not the case. And if we didn't, the Steelers would remind us of it. Pittsburgh seems to take great delight in taking jabs at the Bengals. In recent weeks on social media, Steelers running back Le'Veon Bell has mocked Joe Mixon and suggested that Vontaze Burfict should be kicked out of the league. Then, after A.J. Green was ejected in the Jacksonville game for getting into a fight with Jalen Ramsey, the Steelers turned it into a touchdown celebration the following week. Here's Steelers coach Mike Tomlin.
I'm not going to acknowledge the pettiness. You know, we're there to play a football game. We got business. Maybe it goes down, and that's unfortunate. There's a lot of good, hard, competitive play by professionals on both sides that needs to be highlighted. We waste too much time talking about silliness, in my opinion. We could spend a lot of time talking about the spirit in which these two teams play over the course of the last several years with a lot at stake and how significant that is. But, you know, I'm naive. I know that's not realistic in today's world.
Here's the bottom line. If the Bengals are tired of the perception that the Steelers are in their heads, the only way to end it is to beat them, period. And they've got their chance in front of a national audience at home on Monday night. All right, let's bring in Dave Lapham to discuss the matchup. Lap, I want to talk about how often the Pittsburgh Steelers feature two of the killer bees, Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell. They've thrown to Antonio Brown 126 times. Only Hopkins of Houston has had more passes thrown his way, one more in his case. Le'Veon Bell has handled the ball, whether it's a handoff or a reception, 313 times. That's 67 more than anybody else in the NFL. It's amazing how often they get those two guys the ball.
No question, Dan. And I think the Pittsburgh Steelers understand that the National Football League is about the stars. They understand that better than any franchise, you know, in the league. They're going to get the ball to their two playmakers, no matter what, no matter what the situation. They're going to formation. They're going to do something to create an opportunity for those two guys to get the ball. I wish the Bengals would do a little bit more of that, to be quite honest. Andy Dalton has to get the ball to 18 and 28 in order to compete with the Pittsburgh Steelers. In my mind, Joe Mixon has a skill set that can compete with what Le'Veon Bell gives the Pittsburgh Steelers. Joe Mixon has to touch the ball a ton. A.J. Green has a skill set that can compete with Antonio Brown. I mean, Ben Roethlisberger, even when Antonio Brown's double covered, will say, "You're still open." He'll throw him the football and let him make a play. A.J. Green, with his height, his long arms, his jumping ability, his footwork, his mindset, understanding where he is in the football field, throw him the football. When he's covered, he's open. Get him the ball. He will reward you with contested catches, and if he can't make the catch, he'll make damn sure the defense doesn't. He'll reverse roles and make sure they don't come up with the football.
Pittsburgh won meeting number one this year, 29-14, completely stuffing the Bengals offense in the second half of that game.
They really did. I mean, you know, you look at what transpired. The Bengals tied up at 14-14 with about half the second quarter to play. Their next possession, they go 3-and-out. And six more possessions after that, seven possessions, they ran 23 snaps for 30 yards of offense, one first down. 2 3-and-outs, 2 interceptions, a couple of punts, lost the ball on downs. They just disintegrated. In Pittsburgh, for it seems like the millionth week in a row now, the Bengals against the Pittsburgh's defense, Pittsburgh is number one in the NFL in first downs allowed. The Bengals are dead last in first downs generated. So it's last against first. It was third downs against Denver. You know, it's always something. But the Bengals are averaging a little over 17 first downs a game. Pittsburgh's only giving up a little over 17 first downs a game. So, again, worst offensively, best defensively. Bengals are going to have to move the chains against the Pittsburgh Steelers. Chunk plays would help. And they've given up, you know, in the last five games, four or five plays of over 50 yards. I mean, they have been chunked by teams. There's no doubt about it. And Green Bay chunked them two or three times in that football game last weekend. So Cincinnati is going to have to take care of this Steeler defense that's in the top 10 in just about every significant category, including points allowed, Dan, where they're fourth best in the NFL.
Lab, Ben Roethlisberger has owned the Bengals in their own stadium over the years. I hate to say it, but it's true. He's been here 15 times, including two playoff games, and left town with 13 wins, 13-2 against the Bengals in their home stadium.
It's remarkable. You know, when you throw in Cleveland, he's 24-4 in his pro career in the state of Ohio. He was undefeated his senior year at Miami of Ohio. He's born in Findlay, Ohio. When he comes to Ohio, he's home. I'm home again. I mean, he is totally comfortable. But, you know, maybe this is the year the Bengals can get under his skin a little bit. He's thrown 12 interceptions. There's more than 32 quarterbacks that have qualified the number of attempts to be rated with interceptions. He's tied for 33rd. I mean, he has turned the football over. But, Dan, I mean, in the first matchup, Pittsburgh only scored one touchdown in the red zone in six opportunities. That's 17%. They went 2 for 11 on third down. That's 18%. And they still won the game because their defense dominated the Bengals' offense, and Ben Roethlisberger did not turn it over. They had no giveaways. The Bengals are going to have to take the football away from the Pittsburgh Steelers and play a clean game on their side of things. They cannot afford to give Ben any extra possessions, and the Bengals defense has to give Andy and company more possessions.
We'll check in with a reporter that covers the Steelers in just a few moments, but first, a quick word on Bengals rookie Carl Lawson. How good is number 58? So good that he gets sacks when the Bengals aren't even playing a game. On Wednesday, a Vontaze Burfict sack from the Denver game was switched to a combined sack with Lawson. So, Carl is up to 7.5 this season, just two behind Carlos Dunlap's Bengals rookie record of 9.5. Here's defensive coordinator Paul Gunther describing what impressed him about Lawson when he had the opportunity to interview the former Auburn standout at the NFL Scouting Combine.
Typically, when you ask a young pass rusher, tell me the five best pass rushers of all time in the NFL, when he rings off guys that right off Reggie White, boom, 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 all the way down, and guys that are played 30 years ago, you know the guy's into his craft. So that was something that struck me right away. I asked him You know, what's his best pass rush moves? He went through the whole litany of them. So some guys will tell you, I don't know. You know, but he was all over that kind of stuff. And typically when a kid's like that, it means a lot to him.
Lawson did not have a sack in the first Pittsburgh game. In fact, the Bengals did not have a sack in that game, ending a streak of 34 games with at least one. We'll see if they can get to Big Ben on Monday. The Bengals are third in the NFL in sacks this season. Now time to get the latest from Pittsburgh, from Steelers pregame and Steeler Nation radio host Tim Benz. He joined Lapp and me on the Bengals game plan show, and I started out our conversation by asking Tim if the Steelers respect the Bengals.
I don't know if they respect them. I know they hate them, and I know to a certain degree they fear them. They fear some of the antics from Vontaze Burfict and others. Respect, to a small degree, the talent on the field, yes, is respected, but I also think there's a palpable sense that I take away from the Steelers every time I talk to them about the Bengals, that when the chips are on the table in a big game, the Bengals are going to do something screwy towards the end to mess it up, and the Steelers have a pretty good security that that's coming if there's a close game in the fourth quarter.
Do you think the Steelers feel like they can get under the Bengals' skin very easily, attack the short fuse? There are players that they can target to lose their poise based on their feeling that, okay, they're going to screw it up at the end of the game, and we're going to help them make sure they screw it up?
Yeah, I do. And I would also suggest that Carlos Dunlap's tweets to that effect, the comments to that effect this week suggested that. Insofar as he, you know, pointed out that some of the things that the Steelers do do get under the skin of the Bengals. And I guess he was likely referring to what Juju Smith-Schuster and Le'Veon Bell did in their celebration in the end zone of the mockery of the A.J. Green fight with Jalen Ramsey. I think he was also talking about how, you know, Le'Veon Bell seemed to mock Joe Mixon for what he was wearing, the gloves, the arm sleeve, and all that, and saying that he was copying him. So I think the Steelers are aware that they can instigate, and it's been part of the formula to their success.
Part of the game plan.
Yeah, probably. I mean, I don't think it's any small coincidence that a guy like David DeCastro, who is a really good player, but is also, you know, a smart enough guy, he's pretty good at pressing Vontaze Burfict's buttons. They've had some other players over the years in the past that have done that as well. Joey Porter did that when he wandered onto the field during the situation at the end of the game in the playoffs a few years ago. So the Steelers are acutely aware of that.
Now, Steeler Nation radio host Tim Benz is our guest.
A question about the Joey Porter thing. This is legal. I mean, there's a rule against it. Do you think that was going a little too far, or what's your take on that?
Well, there's a rule now, right?
No, there was a rule that wasn't enforced, and they said from this point forward it will be enforced.
Yeah, it's the enforced. It was called the Joey Porter enforcement. You're right.
Right, because the only people who are supposed to be on the field, the head coach and medical staff, and Joey Porter's out there, you know, doing his thing with Adam Pacman Jones and Vontaze Burfict and whatever. I mean, do you think that's going a little far when an assistant coach is involved like that?
Yeah, I don't think an assistant coach should be going to the level of trash talk on the field with other players. I think there's a different standard
right. That
you should expect from a coach. Now, it worked. You know,
yes, it did.
It worked. He shouldn't have been there, like you said, I guess, based on what the rules were and how lax they were in their enforcement. But
he got a game
it
ball,
worked
didn't he?
For the Steelers. I mean, the thing with Joey is he doesn't realize he's not a player anymore. I think Joey still thinks he's a player.
Tim, how does all of that stuff play in Pittsburgh? Do the fans basically say, yeah, whatever it takes, more of it? Or is there a feeling of, you know, let's just do our thing. Let's beat them because we're better.
I think it's gotten to that place over the past few years since that game. I think when that game got as nuts as it did and, you know, Burfict knocked out Antonio Brown and people were throwing stuff at Roethlisberger and they saw the fever pitch that it got to, they realized that they feel like they're better enough than the Bengals. So let's just go out there and win with talent and experience. And that's more or less been the case since then. I think they feel like they get a little too close to the Bengals when they play at that level, but at the same time, they want to throw a little salt, a little pepper onto the mix just to kind of get the Bengals going and get them off their pins, and that's been a pretty good formula over the years for the Steelers.
Tim, the two losses that the Steelers have, Both teams rushed for over 200 yards against them. Nobody else has rushed for over 100 yards against them as a team. What took place with Chicago and Jacksonville running the ball like they did?
Yeah, I think some other teams probably have erred in that regard. Some other teams that might be good running teams probably should have stuck with it a little bit longer. You know, the thing of it is, actually, one of those games is a little bloated because Leonard Fournette had that 97-yard run when he was only averaging, I think, about 3.6 yards per carry prior to that run.
Right.
So they actually controlled Fournette a little bit better for like three and a half quarters until he popped that long one. The Bears game is the biggest anomaly of the bunch, and one thing the Steelers have never been good at is defending the stretch play, especially the stretch play to the left, and they ran that a lot and then cut it back against the Steelers and get big gains. And the big reason for that is the Steelers, while their best attribute on defense of late as opposed to what it had been in recent years is a great increase in speed, they also are renowned for over-pursuing, shooting through the gaps a little too hard. Ryan Shazier is the king of that. As great as he is, he sometimes gets way upfield too fast and runs by the running back, or potential sackers run by the quarterback because they are so fast, but they haven't exactly mastered the control element. So if you can run the stretch play and cut it back, that's a good place to exploit the Steelers.
Tim Benz is our guest. Three games ago, Joe Hayden broke his fibula. Since he's been out, the Steelers have given up five touchdown passes of 54 or longer. Is that due to the absence of Joe Hayden, or has there been more to it?
I think it's a big part of it. I really do. I'm not necessarily sure why that has made Artie Burns so much more vulnerable, but for whatever reason it has. I mean, you would think that Burns, who was building a reputation of being a pretty good second-year cornerback, would be left alone, and Cody Sensabaugh would just be picked apart because Hayden was gone. But they've also gone after Burns quite a bit in recent games. And to your point, Dan, exactly, the big plays have been particularly troublesome for the Steelers in the first drive out of halftime, which is completely weird because aside from that, they've actually been really good in the second half of the last five games. But the first drive of the last three since the bye, they've given up touchdown passes of, I believe, 61, 75, and 55 yards. So if you're a Bengal fan at Paul Brown Stadium on Monday night, make sure you're not stuck in the bathroom line at halftime. Get back to your seat, especially if the Bengals are getting the kick to start the third quarter. And if the Bengals are smart, they go up top to A.J. Green at some point in that sequence, because that's where the Steelers have had a real case of vulnerability, the first defensive drive of each second half.
I've never seen the Bengals' offense as putrid, honestly, as it was for two and a half quarters in Pittsburgh. It's 14-14, about a half a quarter left in the second quarter. And from that point forward, the Cincinnati Bengals' offense had seven possessions. They ran 23 snaps in those seven possessions, accumulated 30 yards, and had one first down. They had two three and outs, consecutive drive interceptions, two punts, and lost the ball on downs. I mean, I don't know what the Pittsburgh Steelers did, the adjustment they made, but you talk about suffocating. I think it was their excellence and the Bengals not being able to get out of their own way. I think it was a combination, but I've never seen a decent football game get so bad on one side of it so quickly.
Yeah, I remember that about that game, too. And I'm trying to think, am I remembering right? Wasn't that the somewhere along the way, didn't Dalton throw the ball away on a fourth down or something like that?
Late in the game.
Yeah, late in the game, he did.
Yeah, there's, and it just, my point to that, that little kind of nugget is just, it felt like it got to Andy, is what I'm saying. It's just, after a while, it felt like the frustration was just almost at a point where he didn't know what to do in certain circumstances. Like, it got in his head, and that looked to me to be tangible from up in the press box. I agree with you.
No opponent has given Andy Dalton more trouble than Pittsburgh. The Bengals are 3-10 in the 13 games that Andy has started against Pittsburgh, including the game where he broke his thumb in 2015, so maybe that one shouldn't count. In all three of his wins against the Steelers, Pittsburgh has scored exactly 10 points. A tall task to repeat against Ben, Bell, and Brown. We wrap up the podcast this time around with an edition of The Last Lap, devoted to some of the legendary football coaches that Dave Lapham's gotten to know over the years. Our inspiration? The Steelers' four-time Super Bowl-winning head coach, Chuck Knoll, who Lap got to know as a broadcaster.
Yeah, I did, Dan. I was doing a game for NBC, a Pittsburgh Steeler game in Pittsburgh, And it was weird, you know, going there in that kind of a role, that environment. And we had a pre-production meeting with Chuck Knoll. And, you know, Tiger hated Chuck Knoll. All, you know, my line coach hated him. All the coaches hated, you know, Chuck Knoll and the Pittsburgh Steelers coaching staff. So I did, you know, as a player, it's like it all filters down. And I had this perception of Chuck Knoll, you know, preconceived perception. And then when I met him, totally the opposite, you know, very, very calm, articulate, intellectual sort, well-read, wine connoisseur, played at Dayton. University of Dayton, was a messenger guard for Paul Brown. Had a lot of interesting things to say about Paul Brown. Tremendous respect for him. And so, I mean, that was a common denominator for us, was the Paul Brown factor. Because he was like, you know, you played for Paul, didn't you? And I'm like, I did, yeah. And so we were kind of trading stories. So I came out of that with like, wow, lesson learned. Do not, you know, predetermine what kind of a guy this a human being is until you see with your own eyes and listen with your own ears, you know? No question.
Paul Brown is the next legendary coach on our list, winner of 7 pro football championships, probably the most innovative head coach in football history, maybe in sports history. You played for him. You had the distinction of being a pallbearer at his funeral.
Yes.
Obviously, hold him in high regard.
I do, Dan. I mean, he was, I honestly believe if he decided to get into politics, he would have been president. If he decided to get in the business world, he would have run P&G. You know, just one of those kind of guys. He had incredible organizational skills, could evaluate people, not just football players for talent, but people to get a task accomplished and then let them do the job. And if it panned out that they couldn't, he would, you know, make the necessary adjustment. But he was, he's incredibly gifted and, you know, said a lot in a few words, I can tell you that. Players were totally massive men. We're totally intimidated by Paul Brown, who not very big in stature, but was just a pillar in the community of the National Football League. And every player knew that. Every one of them did.
Let's move to a college football coach, head coach at Nebraska for 25 years, winner of 3 national championships, and later in life, a congressman in the state of Nebraska, Tom Osborne.
And that's the thing about him is when I first met him, Dr. Tom Osborne. He's got his doctorate, so extremely intelligent guy. And the first time I was in a production meeting with him, his expression never changed. I would hate to play cards with the guy. You would not know if he was upset, thrilled, or anything in between. And looking at him, it was just, I'm thinking, this guy should be on the Mount Rushmore of something, whether it be, you know, college coaches. He was like almost royalty. You know, the way he carried himself, the way he looked, unbelievable example of poise, confidence. And I remember doing a pregame, we taped a pregame hit, and it had to be 25 seconds. Producer said, we just want you and Dave to, you know, talk for 25 seconds about the upcoming opponent. So that afternoon we showed up, he goes, Dave, I've timed this. If we walk from here to the 25-yard line, we'll be in 25 seconds. And I'm not kidding you, Dan. It was one take from the end zone, walking up, because he goes, I like moving. I don't like to just stand there and talk. Let's just move and talk and Q&A. And we get to that 25-yard line, and he goes, thank you very much. I'm going to go stretch my players. I mean, he had his whole life was figured out to the millisecond. He was incredible.
Let's go back to pro football and a legendary coach who wasn't wildly successful as a head coach. His career record in the regular season, exactly 500. He was winless in the postseason, 0-3 in playoff games. But he is, without question, one of the greatest defensive coordinators of all time, Buddy Ryan.
And loved, universally loved by his players. There's not one player that played for Buddy Ryan that doesn't just adore the guy. And, again, I had an opportunity as a NBC analyst to do a game Super Bowl season, Bengals, Philadelphia Eagles in Philadelphia. So I go into that meeting with the producer and the director, and I'm feeling pretty good. I'm prepared. I'm ready to roll. And sit across from Buddy at his desk and producer, director on either side of me and start firing questions. And I ask him one question, doesn't answer. I ask him a second question. He looks at me, he goes, what do you think I'm going to tell you? You played for the Bengals? You do their games on radio? Son, I'm not telling you anything. And I'm like, I feel the heat coming off my chest. And I like I see the producer and director looking at me, and I'm like, oh, man. So I said, Coach, I said, if you think that I'm going to take the information that you give me and take it back to the Bengals, these guys will fire me before I can even get out of your office. You know, there's no way I could even think about doing anything like that. Just messing with you, son. Throws a playbook at me. Mm. Slides a whole playbook for the game across the table. I mean, that was Buddy Ryan. He tested me.
How about the head coach that he worked for in Chicago, Mike Ditka?
Mike Ditka did a game when he was with New Orleans. And, again, walk in there and his – I guess like Buddy Ryan, his whole thing was he's going to try to intimidate you. And he had an intimidating presence, obviously. And so production meeting, and the networks let the analysts kind of ask the football questions. So I start asking him some football questions, and he looks at me. First question I ask, he said, it's a good question. What's your answer to that question? And I'm like, well, you know, I'd rather hear what you have to say. You know, I'm not going to give you anything unless you tell me what your answer to that question is. So I start to answer the question, and about halfway through my answer, he says, okay, what else do you want to know? I mean, he just wanted to know if you had any knowledge of football or whatever, because he didn't know you from Adam, which I thought was kind of interesting. So it was an immediate feeling out process. And then he was great, you know, exchanging information and everything. But these guys, if they don't know you, boy, I mean, they're really, really cautious. There's no question.
That's going to do it for this edition of the podcast. If you haven't done so already, don't forget to subscribe and do me a favor and give it a rating, preferably 5 stars, or leave a comment. It would be great to know how many of you are listening and what you think. I'm Dan Hoard, and thanks for listening to the Bengals Booth Podcast.